And you know, you see these pictures on Instagram, and of course, they spent 3 hours making their van pretty and you know, throwing away the rotten oranges on the counter and getting that perfect shot. Whereas van life, it takes, I can make a sandwich and my van is just a mess. You know, it's just such a small enclosed space. I own two forks, I own two spoons.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. Whenever trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where our conversations might go. So there aren't too many topics that are off limits for us. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hello and welcome back. My guest this week is Brian Hoover. Brian got into running like a lot of us did, a little bit at a time, and then began running ultramarathons and then started a company, Timing Races. He's the one that sets up the big inflatable finish lines and has the track where it records your time when you cross the finish line. That business led him on to other adventures, including hiking the entire Pacific Coast Trail, and he is now kayaking down the entire length of the Mississippi River. I got a chance to talk with him before he left on his latest adventure, so get ready for another fun trail conversation with Brian Hoover. So, Brian, thank you so much for coming, for being here. I appreciate it. Give us a little bit of who you are and your story about how you got into running.
Yeah, sure. So, my name is Brian Hoover, and I got into running at about 2005. Kind of started the same way everyone did, just training and on road. Started off on road, did 5Ks. Kind of did the similar route all the way up to marathon, and did, you know, 30 or 40 of those. And a buddy of mine turned me on to a wilderness area right inside of Tulsa called Turkey Mountain Ultra Wilderness Area. Okay. It was the first time I'd run on trails, and it was just, I just fell in love with it right away. Started running 50Ks, 50 milers, a few 100Ks. Never did a 100 miler. My body just needs sleep too much. my willpower, once it gets 3 a.m. in the morning, I just go right down the drain. But yes, so I just started running trail races all over the country. And we had our little core group of people that would go travel, you know, to the neighboring states to do these races. And I had a buddy that said, why don't you build a little website and start a little 10-person trail running group so we can share, you know, travel costs to hotels and kind of share gas money and stuff. And so long story short, this little trail running group, we had 10 people, then we had 50 and then 100 and 300. So I created a group called Tulsa Area Trail and Ultra Runners, which stands for TATUR, TATUR.
Okay. I've seen the acronym.
Doing races. Yeah. Yeah. And I've been running pretty much, I got into the chip timing business, and once I get into the chip timing business, my actual running, my belly's not on screen now, but it's, grown a little bit. So I still run, but I don't do that many races anymore. I'm kind of more behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I have all my friends are just, you know, as a matter of fact, my ex-wife, I think she's done like 4,500 mile races. So it's,
wow. That's a bunch.
Yeah.
So you got, you got into the chip timing business. So explain for people who may not know what chip timing is, explain how that works how did your business go? I mean, is there a lot of demand for that?
Yeah, there is. So chip timing is, you know, everyone wears, it used to be a little tiny timing chip on their shoelaces, but nowadays most of it's a sticker on the back of the bib. And slowly I acquired all the equipment. It's pretty expensive stuff to set down at the finish line, to record their finish times, to record stuff out on the course. And I kind of got into the chip timing accidentally. For the first couple of years, we had one race. We had one trail ultra. That was a 50K. And for the first couple of years, I just kind of had some volunteers writing down the bib numbers and looking up at the clock and writing down their time. And it was just a nightmare trying to do age group awards. And we missed a couple of people. So with the chip timing, everything's kind of collected automatically. And that first year, we just timed our race. And then the next year, two or three people said, "Hey, I saw you chip time in a race. Can you do our race?" And I go, "Well, we just kind of do our own races, but I guess I could try." So the first year we timed probably 5 races, and then the next year we timed 10. And then, you know, last year I think we timed like 300 different events. No, sorry, 250 different events. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's just mushroomed into being able to allow me to be my own boss, work my own hours, you know, and still be actively involved with the trail running community, even though I don't do that many races anymore. So yeah, it's been a real blessing.
Catherine Ivey says, "So you need to make the strips smaller so you can fold the bibs into little tiny patches."
Yeah, right. I know, everyone wants a itty bitty little bib.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So it's been quite the adventure.
So, you got into you started your business. So what were you doing before you were doing chip timing? Before you got into this business, what was your?
I was actually building school buses at a plant in Tulsa. They just a big assembly line, and I was on the assembly line putting parts together on a school bus. So. Quite a change from being my own boss.
Yeah. So then you, how has business?
Eric, I think you froze up on me. I don't know. Oh, there we go. Now we're
okay.
Back.
Yeah. I think our internet is kind of slow sometimes. And I noticed
it my feed hiccuped on us. Yeah.
Yeah. My feed on Facebook is locked up as well. So,
gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. There we go. Okay. I hit my settings. I'm still, there we go. My live feed over that I was watching, was frozen as well. So, so the chip timing business, is that's something you're still doing?
It is. Yeah. Yeah. I've got a great office manager who's basically, helping me basically run the company. So I own Tater Racing. We still do the chip timing, but we've been doing it for about 10 years now. We've got it down to pretty much such a science that I personally don't time many races anymore, but I've got a team of timers that we send out. And so this allows me to kind of pursue. I've kind of gotten into hiking and living in my van. Mm-hmm. So although I still own the company Tater Racing, I personally don't do that many races anymore. My company kind of runs itself, so it's been kind of nice.
Yeah. So I guess I wasn't going to ask you about your van life, but before I ask that, how is the fact that so many races have been canceled, has that impacted your business significantly?
It really has. Yeah. In Tulsa, March 19th, kind of is the kickoff to our spring racing season. And we timed one race on the weekend of the 19th. We were just getting ready to get busy when that, stay at home order and no people above, 50 people in an event. So it really hurt us. Mm-hmm. Basically, our business shut down.
Yeah.
And, small business, we don't have, $100,000 in the bank to be able to weather a 2 or 3 month shutdown, especially in our busiest time of year. So we applied for one of the small business loans, the Paycheck Protection Program, mm-hmm. which is keeping us afloat. Hopefully races will start back up here, I'm hoping, by July. So, yeah, it's been real tough on my company as well as, I'm sure, you know, any kind of race organization company or chip timing company around the country. So, yeah, it's been tough.
Yeah, yeah, I'd imagine. And there's a lot of restaurants. I mean, people who are – there are people who've had their businesses completely shut down. I mean, you hear that. And so that's – I just yeah. wondered about, you know, what how that impacted. But you've been – you said you've been living in a van. So tell me about that. What was the reason you started that? And then let's, you know, tell about how you got that started and then where you've gone with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, what kind of really put the idea in my head is just, you know, traveling the country, doing these trail races, doing these ultra marathons, and seeing beautiful parts of the country. And, I have a friend about 25 years ago, 30 years ago, you know, before even van life was a thing, hashtag van life.
Mm-hmm.
He had a VW microbus, and he just said he's going to travel. He didn't know if he was going to go east, west, north, or south. He just wanted to explore the country, and he did that about a year. And like I say, this is probably, I don't know, 1992 or somewhere around there. And I just always thought, you know, that would be such – you know, it's always in the back of my head. You know, I love travel. Mm-hmm. I love to go to races out of town. I love to be up in the mountains. And like I said, I kind of got my business to where my office manager does all the invoicing and pays my employees. I meet with different race directors and give advice. So it freed me up. So I can still actually, you know, draw a little bit of money. My Ferrari. Or anything, but I had the time and a little bit of money, and I thought, you know, why not live out my dream and get a van and just kind of follow the weather and, you know, travel to, you know, I don't really like towns that much, so I mm-hmm. just find a road on the mountains and set up my little camp, and I'll stay there 5 or 6 days and then travel somewhere else. And yeah, it's been pretty amazing.
Yeah. That's good. Having a question here from Catherine Ivy. She wanted to know if you still had any races that are still going on in July.
You know, July, I think we got the hard thing, Catherine, is we have races that are still on the books. They've hired us to time them. They haven't officially canceled them yet. So, you know, I think I'm hoping July for sure. I mean, like I said, our company's hanging on by a shoestring, so I'm hoping most of these July races do happen. But you know how it is. I mean, I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen. You know, with the reopening, are we going to go back to a stay-at-home order, or is the country going to open back up again? So I don't know. Say like,
yeah.
So yeah.
I know one of the races that locally here near Kansas City, the Trailhawks, they postponed their Nighthawk race to was scheduled for June 27th. They postponed it to August 1st. And then the Hawk and the Hawk 100. Well, the Hawk has 100, has a 50, and has a marathon, and they limited to they cut back the registration to only 50 people per distance. So,
yeah, that's how Tulsa is right now. I think we're allowed to have groups of 50 or less. So, it sounds like you guys might have the same kind of conditions that we have down here in Tulsa. So,
yeah. And that's what they're doing for, you know, and that's a September race, was the Hawk. So,
right. Those are some great races up there. I love your guys' area and trail system. I've done some real mud fests up in your neighborhood before.
Yeah. Well, and I've heard from I'm on the Running Off the Crazy group. They talk about was it Turkey Mountain down in Tulsa? Sounds like it's a pretty gnarly hill. So
it is. It's super technical, but it's one of those great little things. It's just, it's a trail mecca, you know, it's right there in the city limits. So that's what's kind of neat is, you know, you don't have to drive 45 minutes out of town. It's just kind of a little jewel hidden right there in Tulsa. So mm-hmm. Yeah, we really love that area.
Yeah, that sounds like it would be. I know have some people who are down there. We get that way every once in a while, and so I may try to.
Is that where you're from?
Kansas City.
Okay.
So
gotcha,
Tulsa is not that far of a drive. And
now is Ben Holmes? Is he still the head honcho? Is he still running the trail club down? What the trail club under the
Ben Holmes?
Do you know Ben?
Ben, the Trail Nerds is
The nerd.
Yeah, the Trail Nerds. Yeah, he cut back on the number of races this year, even before the before the shutdown. And so there are races that are on the Trail Nerds calendar that still are not on still not on Ultra sign up yet.
Gotcha.
So, but yeah, there were a couple of his races that were. The registrations were down just because I don't know the timing or whatever. And so, he said, yeah, for 25 people, he said, it's not worth setting up for a 50K, right. You know? And so, I understand that. So, I don't know. It was, he had one of the races that I was going to run, the Psycho Wico was scheduled for, scheduled for July 27th as well. And I had thought about running both the Psycho Wico during the day and then the Hawk 50K, the Nighthawk at night.
Really?
Do 100K. But, that was one of the things I was just kind of kicking around in my mind. And it, since they then, now they've postponed the Nighthawk, I probably won't do that. But,
unless was it like a midnight start? What time did it start at?
The Nighthawk starts at 8 p.m.
Oh, 8 p.m., okay.
8 p.m., gotcha. And then the cutoff, it's a generous cutoff. It's a 10-hour cutoff for 50K.
Yeah, sure.
But last year we had so much rain that, that I ended up being DFL and right at the 10-hour cutoff because I had a lot of technical issues more than physical and, as far as shoe issues and light issues and just I learned a lot and so
sure
but I actually made me purchase different lights for running at night because what I was using just was I was changing batteries every hour and a half and so my time in the aid stations and I had like 5-10 minutes in the aid stations just changing batteries so
sure
just realized that was not a good thing, not a good situation.
Go ahead.
So I was going to ask you a little bit about your adventures and your van life. Did you do the Pacific Coast Trail? Did I read that correctly?
I did. The Pacific Crest Trail.
Pacific
Coast Trail. We actually never saw the ocean in 2,650 miles because we're always actually on the crest of the mountains. But that was just probably the most epic adventure of my life. We started it at the Mexico Wall, literally south of San Diego, southeast of San Diego. I started on March 26th of 2019. And, the goal was to make it 2,650 miles and touch the Canadian border up in northern Washington. Mm-hmm. And I did not finish the trail. Last year was a huge year for snow up in the Sierras. There were some really dangerous conditions. So most of what I call the sane people, these 24-year-old bucks, mm-hmm. Young college kids that were strong and had some mountaineering experience still went through the Sierras. But I skipped that 600-mile section.
Okay.
But, 2,000 miles plus in, started March 26th, and I hiked almost every day till September 20th, I believe, is my last day. So, wow. Yeah.
So you just drove around the Sierras. So you basically skipped the middle. So you got like a ride around to the next part of the trail.
So we got off in a town called Ridgecrest. What we did is we took 2 weeks off the trail. We went And a buddy of ours had an RV. So we got off the trail and got into his RV, and we explored a little bit in Vegas, and we went to Death Valley. So we wanted to kill 2 weeks to let some of the snow melt in the Sierras, and it was still a mess up there. So we just hopped on a bus from the southern Sierras up to northern California.
Okay.
And skipped that 600-mile section, correct, yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah.
So it was just, it was the altitude that, that caused the snow rather than the distance north?
Right, yeah. It was just, so really the most dangerous thing about the snow is really not the snow. It's the snow melt, which makes those rivers just, I mean, they're so loud and so gushing that if you lose, if you take just one wrong step and your foot slips out from under you, you get washed downstream however far in that icy, cold snowmelt water. And that kills more hikers than anything, is crossing streams. Sometimes you're crossing on logs, you know, 10 feet above the raging river. You know, if your foot slips on that log and you crash down into the river. So that was one.
I lost your audio. I lost your audio, Brian. And I don't know. I'll double check and make sure it's not on my end. But yeah, I'm still on. Yeah, I'm looking, and your microphone is not registering anything coming through.
Still nothing.
I got it. There it is, right there.
Okay, I switched. I switched to this other microphone audio source, so hopefully we'll see.
That's so good.
Yeah,
that's good.
So, but yeah, there's a lot of that. That snow presents a lot of dangers. One of them I was saying is post-holing. So you're walking on top of the snow, and then your foot, your leg sinks all the way down, kind of up to your thigh. And it's just the most tiring way to walk when you're having to crawl on your hands and knees and get your leg out of that post hole. So, yeah, there were quite a few reasons that a lot of us skipped the Sierras last year.
Mm-hmm.
And those were two of my biggest reasons. So, yeah. But, yeah, it was an incredible experience. I mean, so many trail runners, triathletes, lawyers, garbage men, just every walk of life, and there's usually about 3,000 or 4,000 people per year that partake in this Pacific Crest Trail.
Wow! So they're the what they call thru hikers, that they actually are going the entire they're going through the entire 3,000.
Correct. Wow. 2,650 as the Pacific Crest Trail. 2,650.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So it was amazing.
So you'd have some people who, it's not like you're out there all by yourself then. So you're running into people all the time. I mean, I imagine have times when you're really alone, but
I kind of relate it to like a 50K. Okay. Mm-hmm. So at a 50K, you're never by yourself at the beginning, cause everyone's kind of bunched up.
Mm-hmm.
But as the 50K gets progressively longer, you can run by yourself the entire race if you want to, but what happens on the trail and on trail running is usually you'll pass someone and they'll pass you and then you'll pass them again. And then you'll say, hey, my name's whatever. And in the hiking world, they're called tramleys. So you just wind up hiking with 4 or 5 other people, and you might hike with those same 4 or 5 people for a week or 6 months, you know, and so, yeah, you can choose to be out there by yourself if you want to. I mean, you're still going to pass people. People are going to pass you. But most people will find other people that are about their same pace, you know, that don't drive them absolutely batty, because you do spend a lot of time with people. And, yeah, I had 2 trail families. One trail family I had, we were hiking together for about 2 months. And then the other trail family I had, We were together for about 3 months, and you get to know them better than you get to know, you know them better than you do your parents or your kids, because mm-hmm. You're with them 24 hours a day, every day. So
yeah, and not only that, you're facing a challenge together, and that tends to give you a connection in ways.
You're hoping that if you fall off a cliff or you fall in the water, you're hoping that they're going to rush downstream and literally throw you a limb and pull you back into shore. I mean, yeah, mm-hmm. you're wanting them to have your back.
Yeah.
And vice versa. So yeah, there's a real strong bond that forms between the, and the same thing I say in the ultra running world, if you start running with someone and, I say, hey, Eric, man, I'm feeling crappy. I think I'm going to get to this next aid station and quit. You're going to have my back and you're going to say, hey, come on, man, I think you can make it. Come on, mm-hmm. let's just go 4 more miles. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just that camaraderie that brings everyone so close together. So
yeah. And that is a great thing about the trail running community, is that they're so encouraging.
Right.
And so did you get a trail name?
I did. And if you get about 3 minutes, I'll tell that quick little story. Yeah, so everyone gets a trail name. You're supposed to, technically, you're supposed to be wait and be given a trail name by someone else. Mm-hmm. And usually it winds up something dumb you did, or you went the wrong way, or you. So the reason I got mine is we were just probably 2 weeks into the trail, and we were all sitting together at this water source, hydrating, and the question was brought up. And someone asked me if I'd seen a rattlesnake yet. And I had. I'd actually seen a rattlesnake a couple of days before. And it was just this itty-bitty little, 8-10-inch baby rattler. And but, of course, I had a bunch of friends around me. And they said, yeah, I saw a rattler. It was like 7 foot long. It's thick with my thigh. I got it to a headlock, and I wrestled it to the ground. And someone yelled out, fake news. And then that should be your trail name. And I said, I don't want that trail name. It sounds political. But then as I took it, it became pretty fun. So, yeah. I'm on fake stories.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Catherine asked, as she's commenting here, she asked if you're going to do it again, try to do the whole thing.
I actually tried this year.
Oh.
I was supposed to start I was supposed to start March 26th.
Okay.
And on March 19th, I think it was, is when California, I think, was the first state in the nation to issue a stay-at-home order. And the PCT recommended that we don't do the trail, even though you would think that being on the trail is the best place in the world to be.
Mm-hmm.
You're traveling from one small community to another small community.
Right.
And a lot of these communities don't have the health resources. And, yeah, that's the last thing a lot of us wanted to do, is spread the virus up the trail. So
right.
I decided not to do it this year.
And the other thing is, if you're out in the middle of the wilderness and the symptoms come, it would be a little bit difficult to.
Yeah, well, and even if you did, say you got hurt or you fell off a cliff or you got, struck by a rattlesnake or something like that, you're taking those emergency resources away from, the towns that probably need it mm-hmm. As much as I would out on the trail. So, yeah. Right.
So will your permit then extend to next year?
That's a big source of controversy. No. And the permit system for the PCT is, it's actually not hard to get a permit. It's hard to get a permit on the date that you want to start.
Okay.
They only allow 50 people per day to start.
Okay.
So, no, I'll have to go through the permit lotto system just like anyone else would next year. So.
Okay. Okay.
But, yeah, I do want to do the whole thing. And I hope the year I do, it's not one of those freak years, with all that snow in the Sierras. So. Because the Sierras are probably the most beautiful stretch of the whole trail. I mean, the whole trail is incredible, but mm-hmm. the Sierras are, it encompasses all of the John Muir Trail, and you've got those high alpine peaks and incredible scenery. So I really want to see all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, maybe next year.
Yeah, I hope so.
And I've also seen some of your posts since last year that you've been doing some day hikes and kind of roaming around. Were you in Colorado recently? Is that what I saw?
Yeah. I'm in Colorado still. I'm in a Boulder right now. But yeah, I love, you know, it's so nice to, after through hiking that whole time, it's so nice to do an exerting hike, climb a peak, and be able to come home, or not come home, but come back to my van and have a real bed to sleep in, real water to drink, or a cold Diet Coke out of my ice chest or something. So there's a lot to be said for through hiking, but there's also a lot to be said by just being out there one day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. So what's I guess on your agenda for going forward?
My next big adventure sounds pretty crazy, especially since I've kayaked three times in my life, maybe three or four, but, you know, okay. Little, just like everyone kayaks, a little 2-hour trip down a lazy river or something. Mm-hmm. But one of the ladies that I did the PCT with, we got this idea that we want to kayak the Mississippi River, the entire Mississippi.
Okay.
The headwaters start at a place called Lake Itasca, Minnesota. It's where the first little trickles of the Mississippi start. Mm-hmm. And we're going to try to kayak all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico, New Orleans.
Okay. So okay.
I'll start that. I got a my first grandson being born early August. And I'll spend a little quality time with him, and then August, we'll start that adventure.
Okay, so it's going to be a fall trip.
It is. Okay. It is. We want to avoid some of the heat, you know, mm-hmm. the heat and humidity, but we want to finish before it gets too cold down in southern Louisiana.
Yeah, and you'll be following, the cold weather will be kind of following you down as you go.
Yeah, so that's our strategy.
So are there, I'd imagine that the logistics for that is a little bit different than like the Pacific Coast Trail, because the Pacific Coast Trail is kind of set up for hikers. And so there's a lot of resources that you have for exactly. that. So how do you plan for that, for kayaking down the Mississippi?
Well, I mean, you nailed it. For the PCT, there's 20,000 YouTube channels of people documenting their PCT hike. There's books, there's magazines. You know everything that you're getting into. Whereas the Mississippi, there's very little info out there. I've talked to a couple of people that have done it. I've read a couple of people's blogs, and I've probably seen two YouTube videos of some little snippets. But in some ways, the logistics are easier. You've got a kayak, so you can carry a lot more weight.
Mm-hmm.
You can carry more stuff. From what I hear, the banks of the Mississippi is very, very populated. You're not going 100 miles from town to town. There's mm-hmm. towns dotted all over. So my two biggest fears that I need to conquer, one is learning how to, if I flip my canoe or I get thrown out of my kayak, is how to get back in.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is we'll be going through locks, just like the big, not ocean liners, but the barges, I guess.
The barges, uh-huh.
Yeah, so it's figuring out, you know, where to go to get into a lock, and then I guess they raise the water and you go into another lock. But I heard they help you out. They'll tell you kind of where to go.
So is that up at the headwaters more so than, cause anytime I've seen the Mississippi, it's been like this huge wide, cause you know, living in Kansas City, I've just headed east and, you know, in St. Louis St. Louis, you drive across and it's pretty big.
Yeah. Right. I think it's, you know, it can be a mile wide sometimes. I don't remember where all the locks are, truthfully. I will do a lot of research before I do this. But and then the other thing is some of the locks you can't go through. You have to do what's called a portage, where mm-hmm. you have to get your backpack and all your stuff in your canoe and literally carry your canoe. I think the largest port, the longest portage we'll have to do is like a mile and a half.
Okay.
So yeah, I wish I could say I was a little bit more prepared logistically than I am right now, but, I'm still learning.
Yeah. So are you doing canoe or kayak?
I keep saying canoe. I've got a buddy that's loaning me a kayak. Yes.
Okay.
So I'll be
okay.
doing it in the kayak.
Okay.
Pretty That'll stable. Be... one. Yeah.
You say it's a pretty stable one?
Yeah. Pretty stable.
Is it like a sea kayak?
It is very similar to a sea kayak. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
And of course people do it in all kinds of vessels. I mean, I'm sure some have benefits, some have disadvantages, but, so our plan is just to paddle all day, tug our kayak up on a little beach, start a little campfire, spend the night, get them back into the water. And in a lot of ways, it's going to be similar to the Pacific Crest Trail. You know, when we get into a town, sometimes we'll probably hide the kayak in the bushes or lock it up to a tree and take a day off and, mm-hmm. you know, get up a pub and get some burgers and some beer. Have a relaxing day. But
have a shower.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Recharge our batteries for our electronics and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'd imagine. And so you'd be able to have like a backpack so you can carry.
Yeah.
So you could basically leave your kayak
yep.
locked
yep.
And carry all the rest of your valuables. So.
Okay. Yeah, and that's exactly what I plan to do. Okay. Exactly. Yeah.
So how long will this take? How long do you think it will?
Well, like I say, there's not a lot of resources, but the two videos that we watched, it took these, like I say, I like to call them young bucks, 25, 26-year-old males, took them 2 months. So
okay,
I'm thinking it's going to take us close to 3 months,
mm-hmm.
Just because we're not going to probably be we're probably not going to be out there at first dawn and paddling all the way till sunset. We're going to be having a lot shorter days because mm-hmm. we're old and ugly. And then that ugly really slows you down more than you're old.
Well, and so that would put you back. That puts you at the Gulf of Mexico around Christmas.
Well, let's see. August, yeah, September, August, October.
November. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really hoping to finish by mid-October.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, if it gets too late, we'll probably skip a, you know, 100 miles or so. So at least we can experience the ending mm-hmm. in the Gulf. So, yeah.
Yeah. And the thing that I've heard, I think when I was a lot younger, I had kind of thought, well, of course, you know, I read, you know, Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer
right.
when I was a kid. And then when I was 16 years old, I bought a canoe. There was like this discount store. It was kind of like, I don't know if you're familiar with Menards.
A logo. Men's clothing store. Yeah.
No, Menards is they sell lumber.
Oh, okay.
And so I don't know if they've made it down. I ran into them in Iowa, okay. And so now they've moved into this. So I don't know if they've gone quite that far south, but they're more yeah. of a local. But think of Lowe's being mixed with Walmart.
Okay.
And that's kind of what they're at. Cause you can buy milk, you can buy the as seen on TV stuff. I mean,
you can buy 2x4s and
yeah, you can buy 2x4s and flooring all kinds of stuff. So, okay. it was kind of like this store was a smaller version of that. I mean, they sold guns, they sold BB guns. This was back in the, you know, back in the 70s. And so they had canoes as well. And so I bought this aluminum canoe I would take it down the Kansas River. So I lived in Topeka. And so we'd haul it up river and then we'd float down to Topeka. And a friend of mine and I, we did that frequently. And so I had in the back of my mind is someday I was going to take my canoe and go clear to the Mississippi. Nice. But I never did get that done. But in researching it, I heard that the bayous were tricky. That once you got down around in Louisiana, that finding your way through, you know, once the Mississippi kind of spread out into the Delta,
right?
Finding your way through that is. Yeah.
And that's a good point. From what I heard is once you get far enough south, I don't know how far south in Louisiana, that there's like five or six different routes to get to the Gulf. And they're all kind of considered the Mississippi because I think you're right. It just divides and there's different branches. So, it'll be interesting.
That'll be an interesting, I think the farther, I think the south would be, that just would be an interesting going through that.
Because I'm not a big fan of gators or snakes in the water. Yeah. We could probably take the route that has the less, the least amount of water monsters involved.
Yeah. So. That's the thing I've heard from people who live down there that oftentimes snakes will crawl in the boat. And so.
Yeah. I've heard that too, or fall out of the trees.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just like, no, I like the, when the snakes go away for the winter. That's kinda,
Exactly. Another interesting thing is I was told that once you get from Minnesota to St. Louis, I believe you can count on averaging about a mile and a half per hour. Mm-hmm. But I heard once you get south of St. Louis, your speeds can get up to 3, 4, or 5 miles an hour.
Oh, really?
I imagine that's because you've got a lot of rivers converging midway in. I imagine that gets the current going a little bit faster, but I don't know.
I would think it would be the opposite because I imagine it would flow. I mean, that it kind of levels out when it gets down farther, the farther it goes, but I guess not.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I've read that right, but yeah, it'll be nice to be able to not paddle as much and just let the river carry you.
So. Now, in Kansas City, there's the Missouri River flows through Kansas City, and then it also connects at St. Louis. And every year there's a boat race from Kansas City to St. Louis, basically across the state, basically across the whole state of Missouri.
What kind of boats are they?
Anything.
Okay, and so, just anything goes.
Yeah, and so there are team. You can do teams. You can do individuals. I don't know that they do drag. I think there may have been leaving like a dragon boat one time that was entered.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But it's a race. It's a 300 and some miles.
Really? And
so it's very similar to what you'd see in 100. You know, people being out there at night. You know, and just going as far as they can. And so
headlamps on and
interesting. So that's the, but, you know, the Mississippi, I think would be a whole other challenge. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. I can't wait. I'm going to enjoy it.
So when you do adventures like this, when you're the Pacific Coast Trail, are you doing this? Where do you park your van? What?
You know, usually my son or my daughter, they're in their early 30s and, they like to use it for camping or they're still young enough to go to those music festivals.
Okay.
So I usually just park it in their driveway and that way they can take it out for like a weekend adventure or something like that. So,
So the people who hear this, they look at what you're doing and going like, wow, you know, that sounds like such a great adventure. So what are some of the downsides of van life?
I'm glad you asked that. I tried because there are a lot of downsides, believe me. I'll just start off with the van, you know. I'm even dealing with it right now. You know, if you live in a brick and mortar home and your car needs to be repaired for 2 or 3 days, it's no big deal. You just take a taxi and go back to your bed or your home. But living in my van, when my van needs repairs, and my van's an older van and, you know, even newer vans, you're putting so much mileage on it. But yeah, when your van's in your shop, your vehicle's in your shop and your house is in your shop too. So, and that's one of the reasons right now I'm in a motel is because I'm having some problems with my van. So that's one, you know. Back on the van too is you've got everything you own. You're pulling up to some of these trailheads that are remote. All it takes is for one person to grab a rock and break your window and steal every single thing you own, or you know, your most valuable things are always with me. So that's a huge disadvantage. Like I guess going back to the PCT, You know, you're away from family for 6 months. You're out there sometimes 5 or 6 days in between towns. So, you know, if you get sick, you can only carry so much food. It's not like you can just get sick and lay on the trail in your tent for 3 or 4 days because you're going to run out of food. You only you carry a minimum amount of food to get you from one town to the other town. But yeah, just, I mean, missing family is the biggest one. Missing my dogs on these adventures. Yeah, so there's a lot of amazing things, but there's always downsides to you know, adventure stories you hear. And, you know, you see these pictures on Instagram. And, of course, they've spent 3 hours making their van pretty and, you know, throwing away the rotten oranges on the counter and getting that perfect shot. Whereas van life, it takes – I can make a sandwich and my van is just a mess. You know, it's just such a small enclosed space. I own 2 forks. I own 2 spoons. So, you know, if I lose a fork, I'm trying to find that fork because I don't have four lamps. So it forces, you know, everything that I do, whether it's the kayaking, the backpacking, or the van life, it forces you to become a minimalist and think in your mind, hey, I use this once a week. Is it worth taking up room in my van or my backpack or the kayak if I'm only using it once a week? And usually the answer is no. If you use it once a week, you're sending it home because you need your essentials and nothing but. So, yeah, it's tough.
So how has that changed your outlook on life? I mean, you're living this way as a minimalist now for a couple of years.
Right.
How has that changed your outlook on?
It changed everything. I mean, it just, first off, it makes you appreciate what you have even more so. It makes me, you know, and I think a lot of us are this way. You get so happy. You know, you're on Amazon. You're ordering a new this or a new that. Or you're going into Walmart and say, hey, that looks cool. I want to play with that. But when you have to decide what things you really have to have and what things you can do without, two things. First, what makes me want a quality item, you know, because it's my only item. I don't have 17 shirts. So I want a shirt that's going to last me. That's going to be comfortable. I can use it in a lot of situations. But it also just makes you appreciate what you do have. Because, you know, you just, it's almost like a friend. You know, this is my shirt. This is my pocket knife. My one favorite, you know, whatever it is. It becomes like more of a part of you rather than just a possession that you have stuck in a hidden corner of your garage. So. I don't know if that made any sense, but
yeah.
But yeah, I think even if I did, I hope I never live in a brick and mortar house again, because I do love this lifestyle. But I think if I did live in a brick and mortar house again, I would be very minimalistic still, just because it's so nice. You know where everything is. Mm-hmm. The more stuff you own, the more you're a slave to fixing it when something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. And the smaller amount of items you have, the more you can go out and play rather than fixing that lawnmower or fixing that ladder or whatever it may be. So,
how do you maintain your connections with people? You said you've missed family. Do you have other connections that you are able to? Now, of course, you know, all of us are kind of dealing with being separated because of not being able. So we're kind of feeling that, but that's an ongoing thing for you as you're traveling. How do you manage that? Because we all kind of need each other.
So it's been tough on me, you know, because I can't see them in person because, you know, my family's quarantining just like everyone else is. So, you know, try to do a lot of FaceTime. We talk a little bit on Facebook. But the boredom is big. And, you know, I think I used to be like, you know, why do these people post on Facebook every day, posting about their life and all that? And I used to not post on Facebook that much. But since I've been in my travels, I'm mostly alone. And it just kind of keeps me connected with friends and kind of let them know what I'm doing. And in my mind, too, sometimes I'm out in these remote places, so at least if something happened to me and I was to fall off a cliff, so I might say on Facebook, hey, he posted 8 hours ago that he was going to go to little area. So, social media has really kind of kept me sane a little bit, keeping me feel like I'm still part of a community, mm-hmm. even though a lot of my travels, I'm pretty solo. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the upside. That's the good side of social media. I mean, there's a lot of people sure. who talk about the, you know, some of the, there's a lot of things written about the damage yeah. social media can do.
Yeah. But, there's a lot of negatives, but there are some positives.
There are some positives. Yeah. 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 Of people, you know, I would have never met you without that.
Yeah. And, definitely. And no matter where I go, it seems like it's just so strange that, you know, no matter where I go, I'll post, I'm going to head over to, you know, wherever, Colorado Springs. And then someone will post back that used to live in my area that moved out to Colorado Springs. So mm-hmm. it's been really neat. I've seen a lot of friends out on the road that will kind of be my tour guide and show me, you know, the highlights of their, what I call their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Show me some hikes or show me some interesting places to visit. So social media keeps me connected with the with those kind of people as well.
Okay. Yeah. So you're hiking. Are you running at all?
I am. I go through spurts. You know, I'll go through 2 or 3 months where I'm running 4 or 5 days a week. And then I might go a month where I'm not running at all. I'm almost always doing hikes, runs. I rent a lot of bicycles when I go into towns and try to do some dirt road, what I call kind of dirt road touring, just mm-hmm. find a dirt road somewhere and ride my bike. So I stay active, but my running is kind of,
yeah,
kind of up
and yeah. Yeah. Running for fun more than for, preparing for a race. Cause yeah.
And I'm glad you brought that up too. It's funny. I'm in the racing business. I do chip timing. Mm-hmm. You know, I've probably done 150 races over my career, but I've almost gotten to the point where I don't like races because on a race, you've got to stay on a course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my running now is I just take off. I don't know if I'm going to run 2 miles or 10 miles. I don't know if I'm going to do an out and back or a loop. What I like now is I'll just start running somewhere, find a dirt road, and then I'll look to my left and say, oh, that looks pretty down that way. Let's go see where this leads.
Mm-hmm.
So my running is a lot more, I guess, exploratory now, whereas you know, I don't have anything against races, and I still will probably do some more races, but I like the freedom of just running, stopping to take some pictures, you know, seeing where this trail goes to, or turning left if I want, going straight if I want, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's my favorite kind of run.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who run similar to that. They'll pass hikers, and hikers will say, "Well, you're missing." You know, you're missing right. so much. You don't get to see much. And right. and the runners always say, well, you know, I see more yeah. than yeah. the walkers do because exactly. I can cover more distance.
You're covering more ground. Yeah, exactly.
And if you're on a trail, if you're walking or if you're running, you're looking down at your feet. I mean, it doesn't matter. Exactly. I mean, you've got to watch where you put your feet, no yeah. matter how fast you're going. And
you know, it's funny you say that. So when I was a runner, I thought, man, hikers got it made because they can walk and look up. But it's the same thing hiking. I mean, if you're looking up, you're going down. So mm-hmm.
Yeah. And runners, we just go down harder because we're moving right. faster.
Exactly. But
yeah, that's the thing that I like is that I am, you know, even if I'm training, I always stop. You know, I'm one. I'll run in spurts and I'll run hard. And then I was like, okay, you know, and I'll stop and I'll walk and I'll look around.
Yeah.
And even, you know, even if I've been on the trail before, because there's, you know, new things that are there every day, the right. scenery changes, different flowers. And so I do the same thing, even though, you know, I'm keeping time and right. I have a plan, but yeah, I like that. I like the ability to look around.
And the saying I like for both, and it applies to both runners and hikers, is when you stop, take a break, look backwards, because you know sometimes your view forward might be great, but sometimes if you just look backwards, you're like, oh my gosh, look at that, you know. Mm-hmm. So I always try to make a note to look backwards from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah. I have several people have talked to me about the book Born to Run, and I read it this last weekend. Uh-huh. And I'm still digesting some of that, but the idea of the exuberance of being able to be active and to be, sure, you know, moving through the world. Right. That feeling of lightness and I found it's more of it's as much of a mindset as anything. Because it's the feeling of the lightness and the feeling of joy, isn't automatic for us as runners. I mean,
exactly. And, you know, I try to tell people, you know, I'm a heavy guy. I am not, you know, I've been in shape, a lot better shape than I am in now, but I hear so many people saying, you know, I'll do that once I hit a certain weight thing or something. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm still too heavy to hike, or I'm too out of shape to start running. It's, you know, you can run anytime. You can hike anytime. You're not going to be fast as, you know, some of the, you know, little gazelles. But, you know, I think, you know, you're wasting a lot of your life by not doing the things you love, not cycling, not kayaking, not climbing a mountain, you know, by waiting for the perfect time. You know, there's going to be no perfect time in your life. You're mm-hmm. always going to have responsibilities. You might be out of shape. It's just do it now. There's no better time than the present.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for making time to be here.
Yeah,
and, I appreciate getting to know you and, some of the things that you shared. It's, and that's a great place, I think, to wrap this up. It's like, don't put off what you're going after. And, you know, and I know all of us have been there. I mean, I had a lot of my life that was that way. And it's like, oh, you know, someday, and just, I didn't take the action. Didn't want to bad enough, I guess, you know, because I was, it's always an excuse. I mean,
sure,
you know, saying I'm going to wait till whatever, and
money, you know, family, health. And, yeah.
Yeah. And, so just, yeah, get out and do it.
Yeah.
So,
and before I forget, thank you, Catherine Ivy, for putting us together and, recommending, I hope to follow a lot of your shows and your page and all that. So.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Yep, and that's,
for sure.
My purpose is to talk about mindset and,
sure,
and the mindset for getting out and being, but it's also connected with the body, because the mind,
sure,
and, you know, mind and body connection.
Work together.
And, you know, and that, again, the book Born to Run kind of talks about that, just of the,
yeah,
of how we, you know, live in our body and can actually do what you, do more than you believe you can, because,
sure.
So, and Catherine says, thanks and stay safe. So,
okay, great. I'll see you soon, Catherine.
Thank you a lot, Brian. I wish
all
you
right.
Well, and I'll look forward to following you on Facebook and,
sure,
and staying in touch and,
okay,
looking forward. Hopefully you can post about your adventure going down the Mississippi.
Yeah, I will.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, no, but thank you for having me on.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say a few words here at the end and then, I appreciate you again. Thanks. Hey, if you're watching this still, thank you for watching. I appreciate you being part of this. I apologize for the technical difficulties in the late start. But this is something that I'm really enjoying, having different people come on and talk about their adventures and talk about the mindset of going out and pursuing what you dream of. And so if I can help you, message me. I'd be glad to talk with you if you're experiencing anything as far as can help you with your running plans or your running goals. Send me a message. I'd be glad to talk with you. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.